It's the OPB Politics Now podcast for Thursday, November 9th, 2017. I'm Julie Sabatier. I'm here with OPB political reporters Jeff Mapes and Lauren Dake. Hey there.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome back from D.C., Jeff.
Thank you very much. Good to be home to good old rainy Oregon.
And we've got rain.
There you go.
Let's get right to it. There was an election on Tuesday, and we saw some pretty interesting results in both Oregon and Washington. And, you know, as we discussed on last week's episode, there was a surprisingly contentious port commission race up in Vancouver. Lauren, can you remind us why this was such a big deal?
This was an interesting race, and it received a lot of attention, mainly because it was considered to be a referendum on a proposed oil terminal. The oil terminal, if built, would be the largest in the nation, capable of handling 360,000 barrels of oil per day. So it would really increase the amount of oil being carried through the region. Normally, port elections are a little sleepier, but this one brought in nearly $1 million, a lot of which came from outside companies and oil interests.
And we had two candidates, one that was sort of pro-oil and one that was anti-oil terminal, going up against each other. So how did it turn out?
The anti-oil candidate won. His name is Don Orange, and he was very critical the entire time of the Vancouver Energy Project. Those are the people behind the oil-by-rail terminal. And he said as soon as he takes office, which is in January, he's going to work to cancel the lease so that the project is never built.
Wow, okay. That's a pretty definitive statement.
Ask one question about it. What was the big argument that he made against the oil terminal that clearly resonated with voters?
I think he really felt like it wasn't something that was going to benefit the community long term. He didn't want, you know, that Vancouver to be known as a place as having the nation's largest oil by rail terminal. He felt like there are other reasons and other ways in which the community should grow.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And it seems like maybe all of that money pouring in from the companies that would have directly benefited from it to the other candidate may have also, you know, left a bad taste in people's mouths and made them vote for the other person.
It seems like that. It seems like that backfired.
Yeah. Well, sticking with Washington for a moment, there was also a key state Senate race in the Seattle area. This was a race between two first-time candidates, Democrat Manka Dhingra and Republican Jin Young England. And that race actually wasn't called until late yesterday. But the Democrat did win. Jeff, remind us why this race was so important.
Well, this was for control of the Washington State House, which had a one-vote Republican majority. Now this race seat is flipped to the Democrats. The Democrats will have a one-vote majority now. And this means the entire West Coast, Washington, California, Oregon, all have Democratic control of both houses of the legislature and of the governorship. You know, there's only seven states in the country this way, and three of them on the West Coast, and the Democrats are kind of gleefully calling it the Big Blue Wall.
Yeah. So, Lauren, what does that mean, this Big Blue Wall along the West Coast?
Well, I chatted with Governor Inslee on the phone yesterday. He's in Switzerland heading to Bonn, Germany later this week to meet up with Governor Kate Brown to discuss climate change. And I think that, you know, Governor Inslee, who has a nickname, the Green Governor, I think that in the immediate term, that's what he's most excited about, kind of gaining momentum for some of his carbon pricing or cap and trade climate curbing ideas.
And Tuesday was a good day for Democrats all around. Should Republican gubernatorial candidate Newt Bueller in Oregon, should he be worried about that as he looks ahead to 2018, Jeff?
I do think he does have to spend some time thinking about it as well as his strategists. You know, one thing I think is really important to keep in mind here is that Newt Bueller deliberately avoided running against Kate Brown in 2016. You know, there was an unusual gubernatorial election in Oregon that year for Kate Brown to fill out the term of her predecessor, John Kitzhaber, who resigned. And Newt Bueller, though, he did not want to run in a presidential year. He would rather run in this off-year election, 2018 coming up, generally speaking, because turnout is lower. Democratic turnout tends to drop more than Republican turnout in these off-year elections. Well, surprise, surprise, Virginia turnout was way up over what it had been, you know, in their last gubernatorial election 4 years ago. Even more worrisome for Republicans, the biggest increase in turnout were in Democratic-leaning areas like the suburbs of Washington, D.C., which is really the power in Virginia politics now. So you translate this to Oregon, and if I was Newt Bueller, I'd be sitting there thinking, okay, we really got to figure out what we're going to do in the Portland suburbs. I mean, that's one thing where Republicans have to run strong is in Clackamas and Washington counties.
And we should acknowledge that Newt Bueller still has to win the Republican nomination, but he is favored to be the candidate to take on incumbent Democrat Kate Brown in 2018.
Right. And that's a very good point, too, because he's got to still figure out how to maneuver a potential primary. You know, there are some conservatives, particularly Oregon Right to Life, that still is looking for another candidate to kind of run as more of a social conservative.
Right. Well, let's turn to some local races in Oregon. A few weeks ago, we devoted an episode to this ballot measure in Douglas County. Voters there were considering a drastic change to the way that their county government is run. And here to fill us in on how that turned out is Jefferson Public Radio reporter April Ehrlich. Hi, April.
Hi.
Thanks for coming back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So for anyone who missed that episode on October 19th, what was this home rule charter that people in Douglas County were voting on?
It would have changed Douglas County's county government from running with a three-board commission where all three commissioners are paid full-time salaries. And it would have changed it more to how Oregon cities are run, which is with a five-board commission. And all five of these members would have been volunteers. And then there would have had to been a county manager to administer the county. Right now, there's three commissioners, and they each administer the county, like different departments in the county.
And that measure failed pretty spectacularly. What does that tell you?
It failed with 76% of folks voting no. And there's a couple of things that this election says about Douglas County. One is that the timber industry and other industries have a really strong hold in this county. They poured about $140,000 into this campaign versus the $12,000 who wanted home rule. The other is that voters in Douglas County are very loyal to their sheriff. The sheriff wanted voters to vote no because of a clause that said the board would be able to overrule any state or county ordinances. So he didn't like that rule, and he asked that voters vote no. And I think that campaign had a lot to do with how people voted in Douglas County.
I have one other question for you, April. I heard some talk. The opponents did a good job of sort of turning the race partisan. You know, the commissioners are, you know, certainly fit politically, conservative Republicans in that county. Do you think that had an impact, that they sort of painted the proponents of this volunteer county commission as maybe more to the political left?
Yeah, definitely. The folks who were wanting home rule were the same folks who had wanted the county to no longer log its parks. And so the county commissioners, who are all Republican and very conservative, painted the no party as very left-wing environmentalists. And it went both ways. The side that wanted home rule was painting the commissioners and the businesses as being very conservative and Republican and going against the community interests. So it was a dirty campaign and at the local level. And, in the end, the voters went the way that they normally do in Douglas County, which is very conservative. And they went with the Republican side of this battle.
All right. Well, thanks for filling us in on that, April.
Yeah, no problem.
April Ehrlich is a reporter for Jefferson Public Radio. You can follow her on Twitter at April Ehrlich. Lauren, in the Portland metro area, a lot of people had only one thing on their ballots, and that was a $185 million bond measure for Portland Community College. How did that one work out?
That's right. Most people marked yes. It looks like that bond measure did pass.
And so what does that mean for PCC?
They really planned to use this money for a wide range of issues. They had this entire long laundry list of renovating new classrooms, adding new classrooms, adding technology, adding training programs. They're going to make some seismic and security upgrades, and they're also going to build a new daycare. So there's a lot of projects that they have to dedicate this money to.
And Jeff, is there anything that other organizations or institutions that might be considering similar measures can learn from this particular bond measure?
Well, certainly, you know, it was in a way it was an easier measure to pass because it doesn't actually increase taxes over what they were. It replaces another bond measure. Now, of course, if people had voted it down, you know, it would help to reduce property taxes some. I think this will be encouraging to other organizations to look for property tax measures because it shows, despite a fairly robust increase in property taxes, that didn't seem to generate a big backlash, at least for this ballot measure. Also, bear in mind, it's like a five-county area, so we're not talking about just, you know, say, very liberal Portland that was voting on this.
All right, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit about what the GOP tax plan could mean for Oregonians.
Support for OPB comes from our members and from Willamette University, with an undergraduate college of liberal arts and graduate schools offering law and MBA programs. Learn more at willamette.edu.
Why can't every student graduate high school?
That's what we are asking in OPB's new podcast, The Class of 2025. I am Roxy La Torre.
And I'm Rob Nanning.
Well, I don't really like school. Just kidding.
It feels better when I have to work at it, because it feels like I'm getting more work done when I keep on working at it.
We'll visit school and home with teachers, parents.
Most of all, kids. Find Class of 2025 and the Spanish version, Clase de 2025, wherever you find your podcasts.
Jeff, you spent some time in D.C. recently, and you've been thinking a lot about how the Republican tax plan, as it's been proposed, could affect Oregonians. Can you give us some highlights?
We're not hugely different from the rest of the country in the sense that the Republicans are trying to come up with a plan that will give most middle-income people a tax break, at least at first. But Oregon does have a couple of differences. One, because we have relatively high income taxes, particularly for those who are more, shall we say, in the upper middle income arena, and fairly high property taxes, getting rid of a lot of that tax deduction will affect a larger percentage of people here. Not a majority, but it's going to affect more people here. Another interesting thing I just learned about this week, AARP, the senior group, did a study and found there's something like 160,000 taxpayers in Oregon who use a medical deduction. And really, these are only for people who have medical costs that are more than 10% of their income. So we're talking about people who all of a sudden got hit with really big medical bills, you know, because of long-term care, some, you know, horrible cancer or something where they have really high treatment costs. And so once again, it's a pretty small minority of the population, but it's a larger percentage than the national average. And those are stories that can be really compelling if people are all of a sudden saying, oh my gosh, I've heard about somebody who really could be in trouble for this thing. And so that's going to be a political challenge for them, I think.
Jeff, how do you think Oregonians will react to Greg Walden's decision to support this bill?
You know, it's interesting from the perspective of Democratic-leaning Portland and, you know, the sort of the west side of the state. I think that's a very common question. People wonder about that. But bear in mind, you know, his district is very conservative. He's won there very strongly. And I'd almost reverse the question and say, politically, can he afford not to support this bill? For Greg Walden, you know, the thing that he always probably, like many Republican members of Congress and Democrats too, he has to really worry more about a primary challenge than a general election challenge. And so I would be very surprised if he was to go against his Republican base on this issue, as long as the Republican base continues to support this bill. Now, the big, you know, if he decides that this bill is troublesome, I bet you that signals a really strong feeling in the Republican caucus that would lead to some major changes in it.
Right, because he's not an outlier. He's in lockstep.
He really is. If there's one thing I've learned about him is he is a pretty big team player with the Republican team in Congress.
Right. Well, that's it for now. Lauren Dake and Jeff Mapes are both political reporters for OPB. Thank you so much for being here, both of you.
Good to be with you.
Thank you, Julie.
And you can follow them on Twitter at Lauren Dake and at Jeff Mapes. I'm Julie Sabatier. You can follow me on Twitter at Julie is Loud. I produced this episode of the OPB Politics Now podcast with help from Jeff Norcross and editorial oversight from Kim Frieda. Our music comes from Audio Network, and our audio engineer is Stephen Cray. We love hearing your feedback. Email your comments and questions to us at opbpoliticsnow@opb.org. And don't forget to leave us a rating or review in Apple Podcasts. You can always keep up with all of OPB's political news on our website, opb.org. Thanks for listening.